What's up, everyone, and welcome to the Elevate Experience,
the podcast about overcoming struggles and adversity and how that relates to addiction, recovery, and health. I am your host and the CEO of Elevate Addiction Services, Angie Manson.
And I'm Dallas Terrell, co-host and life intervention counselor at Elevate. Thank you so much for joining us, and let's jump right in.
All right, so today's special guest, we have Tom Lagan. He's been with us for many years. He oversees the entire delivery portion after detox of the program. And he also coaches our CrossFit classes and does one-on-one counseling. He kind of does it all around here if it has to do with the clients. So welcome to the show, Tom.
Yeah, thank you. Good to be here.
Welcome, Tom.
Right on.
Okay, good. So let's get into it. What tell us, I kind of briefly went over the things that you do in the program, and it changes after time. But because you're over all those parts of the program, you have to be able to jump into any one of them at any point in time. So what's your favorite part of everything that you're over?
Ooh, that's a tough question. My favorite part, I'd have to say, well, I'm doing a lot of it right now. Cause I kind of jumped in to help out. But group facilitator, you know, that's kind of where or group counselor. That's where I started off here at Elevate. And, you know, so I have a certain amount of respect and, you know, liking towards that particular area. And, I think what I like about it the most is, because it's so hard, it's so much of a challenge. It's hard to, you know, balance all these different personalities and get everyone comfortable to share, you know, at group level. And, you know, there's something magical about it when you can get a bunch of people from all different places in the world. Maybe. Country.
We've had people here.
We've had some foreigners.
Australia once.
Canada.
Yeah. No, I guess it's true. We've had somebody recently here from Germany. Yeah.
So, yeah.
There you go.
But, you know, he moved to the U.S., you know, a few years ago. Anyways. I think it's the challenge of it, of balancing the group, you know, keeping people balancing, you know, having fun, you know, and making some jokes, laughing a little, with also, you know, taking the program really seriously and taking a hard look at themselves and, you know, and getting a person comfortable enough to, you know, be vulnerable with a bunch of people they don't really know that well.
Yeah, I'm going to back up just for a sec. So when we talked about in previous episodes that we around here call it team. And that's because mm-hmm. we like to look at it more as a collaborative effort between, you know, you and also the clients. Do the clients respond to that? Like feeling like it's a more peer-to-peer thing as opposed to you're in there instructing them and, you know, pointing out faults and that sort of thing. Is it more of a group collaborative effort?
That's one of the big goals, you know, of the group facilitator role, is to not just be a teacher there just teaching a particular subject or a tool that they can use, but, you know, really facilitate the group in a way that they all feel as though they're coming together, they're bonding with each other, relating to each other, supporting each other. And, you know, we have a few groups or teams that really focus on creating that bond, which they do in the beginning of their program. And, you know, in those groups, it's, you know, very clearly laid out, like, what the optimum vision is for the group as a whole. So when they start off in their program, like in phase one of the program, they learn that this is the goal, for all of us to come together, for you guys to be able to support each other. And, you know, a big point that I make a lot of the time is, you know, let's say, you know, you've had it, you feel like, you know, this isn't the right place for you, or you're not ready to, you know, address your addiction. You know, a client can literally meet with every counselor here, but sometimes, you know, those bonds that they may have created in the beginning, those clients are the ones that are able to get through to them, you know. And so if you really push or press that issue, or not issue, you really press that point of creating a team environment where everyone comes together to support each other in their recovery, it usually pans out really, really well. And so it's good that we have, you know, groups geared towards, you know, making that point crystal clear for them, and also like experiencing that point. It's a point that is in like the activity room and treatment rules of the program. Is it defines like what a team is, and they read about that. But it's different when you push it into, you know, application. And I don't mean to say push. I mean more so like encourage it. And so in some of the groups, a lot of people are really, really awkward at first. They don't really want to give feedback to each other. You know, they don't want to, they have a hard time supporting each other. They're having a hard time supporting themselves, you know? And so, with a little encouragement, it usually happens pretty organically, you know, just subtle encouragement. Just something as simple as, do you guys have any support or feedback for Paul? You know, and you just let that question just sit in the room. And sometimes it's like an awkward silence for like a minute and a half.
I could imagine.
Which is, you know, something that you just kind of allow it to just be for a second. You know, it's like no one says anything, but somebody always has something to say. Somebody, you know, feels the need to support, and everyone feels better when they're supporting each other, you know. So,
and I think it goes far too when you have peers communicating support or ideas. You know, people are like, oh, you understand, you're in the same situation as I do. I think it they internalize it. I don't want to say more than hearing it from you, but it probably resonates because it's completely applicable for all of us going through the same thing at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as when I'm facilitating, I try not to take like that role of like I'm above you guys or I'm better than you guys because I've been doing this. I've been in the field. I know more about recovery. I try to, you know, soup down or just be on their level and relate to them on their level, which, you know, also helps encourage that organic feedback and that organic just support, you know, for the group and creating that team environment.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like you're equally as part of the team. You know, you're like a team member as well. That's what it kind of feels like.
Yeah, and that's kind of when I'm like working with new counselors or you know, new facilitators. Maybe they're not a certified counselor yet. New facilitators, I try to really make that a big point is like, you know, try not to talk like, you know more than them or you're above them. Try to just present it in a way that, you know, is relatable and not coming from this like authoritative, like point of view. And, it's kind of a hard thing to do. A lot of people, it can be, you know, somewhat nerve-wracking, especially for somebody new, you know, learning the role.
You've got to be able to think quick on your feet because sometimes you're getting thrown stuff that you've got to know how to respond and control the room without losing control, but not seeming like you're controlling the room. It's a very tricky little thing you got to do.
The nuances of facilitating groups, you know?
Yeah, it's a little balancing act.
Yes.
You know, as soon as you, you know, take control. It's either you do so in the right way or you do so in the wrong way.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Can like push people away. And it's, you just really have to be compassionate, I think, for, you know, where everyone's at, you know, and I try not to put a lot of judgment on people or show any judgment towards them at all. You know, if I think they're not, you know, taking it seriously, and try not to do a lot of like public correction, more so just showing them that you understand, like, this is where they're at today. You know, just,
that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. And just simply saying something like that. Okay. Like I understand that's where you're at today, you know, and you know, I just encourage you to, you know, try to just connect with the topic a little more, but you know, I understand if, you know, today's a hard day for you.
Yeah, of course.
Something like that. And you know, it's funny, you do that or you do like, that's not appropriate. Mm-hmm. Like you can't share like that in here. And the responses that you get from either side of things is interesting. You know, like the first example, they, you know, they think about it, you know, and they might be quiet for the rest of the group. And then the next day they come in and they're, you know, a little bit more engaged. The other response, the team might turn against you.
Yeah.
And other people chime in with that similar joking attitude about the group, you mm-hmm. know, which is, it's, you know, it's just, I'd have to say that my approach of running groups has changed a lot over the years, you know, and there's,
I could imagine, yeah.
There's, you know, you kind of just learn so much through experience here.
No, mm-hmm. Nothing replaces experience.
Exactly.
Nothing we do. We had a similar conversation with Scott yesterday. It's just, the experience is invaluable.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't really learn experience in a book. You know, I think that's kind of what we talked about. But one thing that was interesting too, that I thought we should kind of highlight is like with counseling, I think we talked about it with Scott too, but we're not lecturing the clients. We're not telling them mm-hmm. what to do per se, but it's more of this, like we're exploring, like let's explore mm-hmm. denial and how it sits and lands with all of us. Let's explore yeah. how this addiction is a problem, mm-hmm. you know? And so it sounds, I guess maybe, you know, talk to like how you do that. Like, because I would imagine, you know, it kind of reminds me of the like teach a man to fish analogy, right? You know, but you never actually teach the person to do it for themselves. So that analogy, right? It's like, okay, how do you teach the clients to like explore what's going on with them? Is it through questions? Is it through, you know, like prompts? Like what do you do for that, I guess, is my question.
I like to... A lot of discussions that we do here, you know, they could be considered like open discussions where, you know, a few people could share, and there's always those that are in group that are really comfortable talking,
right?
You know, they're really comfortable talking in public, and they can kind of dominate the group,
good or bad.
But you know, the best way is, you know, in my opinion, is to keep everyone involved and, mm-hmm. you know, take a question all the way around the room. Bring it around the horn. And they learn so much from each other, you know.
You would call this, and I think the industry knows it as motivational interviewing, right?
Yeah,
we're not
exactly.
telling you. We're asking prompting questions to get you to think and have the ideas of your own.
That's exactly it.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Good. Tom, how many teams do you think we have? I know we just went through and re-edited all of them. I know it's a lot.
It's a lot.
I want to say like close to 50 or something like that.
Yeah.
We have a lot of them.
Yeah. I think it's around 50 or 60, somewhere between that and that. Yeah.
So the cool part is during the program, they're never going to do the same one twice. They're literally going to get something new every time they go in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we cover so many different topics, you know, in there, you know, from, you know, the minds of, you know, many different people that are currently here that have a lot of experience in recovery. And yeah, I think that the clients really appreciate the variety of groups that they get here. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, I had a client recently make the connection, you know, like what he was learning in phase one really, you know, coincided with the teams that he was, you know, receiving. And, you know, I think that's a cool thing. I don't think everyone necessarily makes that connection because, you know, some of the points are, you know, could be a little over their head, I guess. However, for those that make that connection, it's really, really cool. And the variety that we have is amazing. I think that's one of the most important things is to not just, you know, have just a stale environment where every day feels the same. However, they may show up in the same room every day and be sitting at the same table or in the same chair. But, you know, the way that the groups are facilitated, they all have different instructions. So,
well, and that was the intention laying it out, is that each phase had its own set of groups or teams so that they did play off of each other. And you're right. Not everybody puts that together. We don't make a thing of it. But, you know, you wouldn't have somebody brand new doing a team from phase three or four, because that's more advanced. There's more work that's already been done before we hit those, like, I don't want to say harder teams, but certainly they've been doing it enough where we can start going a little deeper with everybody than we would with the brand new people in phase one.
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of the phase one stuff is related to being present, different offshoots of, you know, the overall topic, which is mindfulness. Whereas phase three, the main message there is responsibility
and accountability
and accountability, and also making good decisions, you know, in life. So, you wouldn't have a group on responsibility in phase one, it really helps for the client to have that education aspect of it before they go into like an open discussion, you know, just giving them just a few articles, that they read and do assignments on their own in their independent study. And then they enter an environment, a more open discussion environment, and it gives them a little more confidence to talk about it. And they kind of form their own opinion on it. And
that's good, because you can see where, I don't want to say like herd mentality, but people can lose their own insight if they go into agreement with just everything that everybody else is saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I think my big question, Tom, so for the audience, I do more one-on-one counseling. Tom's been a one-on-one counselor, runs groups, helps other counselors become counselors and learn one-on-one counseling and learn group facilitation and case management, all that stuff like we said earlier. But what would you say is like the biggest difference between group facilitating / counseling and one-on-one counseling, like individual counseling?
The biggest difference is the style is a little bit different.
Right.
That's for sure. And when I'm one-on-one counseling, my tone and demeanor is a little bit different. When I facilitate groups, I'm a little more energetic. You know, I'm trying to get a large audience of, you know, anywhere from 8 to 15 people engaged. Whereas one-on-one counseling, I'm really just I'm focused on connecting with that one person. And, you know, both roles, you have to be a really good listener, you know, which is one of the most important parts is just being a good listener, you know, holding that space. But at the end of the day, they're very similar.
Right.
You know,
like
you,
outcomes and goals are similar.
Outcomes and goals are similar. And, a one-on-one setting, I feel as though I do a lot more communicating than I do as a group facilitator, because, you know, everyone has a voice in a large group. That's a tough question. You know, they're very similar and
also very different.
Yeah.
I think that's what's interesting is like you're saying, like to connect with 15 people is a lot different than connecting with one person, you know, especially if you have all different ages and cultural backgrounds and drugs of choices. And so it's like, how can I be more appealing or inviting or understanding of all these people at one time? Like, I know for me, that would look completely different than it does when, you know, I get a 20-year-old male client than maybe a 60-year-old female client, right? Like the way that I would engage or communicate is completely different.
And I guess the thing that's coming to mind now is, after thinking about it for a second, is, yeah, you can go a lot deeper in a one-on-one session. Whereas like in a group, I may not push super hard on, you know, the relationship between a client and their father, you know, I just hold that space and, you know, make them comfortable to share what they're comfortable sharing at that time. And I really give them some recognition, and you know, some praise for whatever they decide to share at in a group environment. Whereas in a one-on-one session, you know, I try to navigate them to go a little bit deeper into that relationship, into the feelings and emotions that that relationship brings up, and you know, things along those lines. So
yeah, we're definitely not pro like attack therapy, like you know finding the value in that. We're calling somebody out in front of a group, you know, in this state that they're in. I don't find that to be very successful. I mean, there might be extreme cases where it works, but
yeah, there's a time and a place.
Yeah,
I think, you know, like behavior wise you know, if they're infiltrating the group or hogging the mic, you know, or something like that. But
yeah, but knowing that the number one fear that most people share is public speaking, then to have someone speak and then like attack.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I just think, oh my God, exactly. How traumatizing. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So yeah, you kind of have to be a little careful with your questions at group level.
Do you find that they're gentle with each other, or do they feel comfortable enough that they might call each other on things that they've seen or heard before and the person isn't following through?
That's a good question. It goes both ways, you know. It depends on the group dynamic at the time. You know, I've heard, you know, clients kind of make a joke out of some deep personal stuff with each other, which is, you know, obviously not okay. And that's why we have,
you know,
yeah, well, we have me there and I also, you know, document things like that so that that person can be talked to by the conduct intervention counselor, you know. But you know, other times, it goes the other way, you know, where another client will, you know, they'll be talking about a subject. Let's just say like codependency. You know, and somebody will have, you know, have heard their share, another client heard them share about, you know, the relationship with their girlfriend from 5 years ago that ended really badly. And, you know, in the present day, you know, they're in a position where, or they're of a viewpoint where this doesn't apply to me. And they're sharing like, I don't really see how this applies to me. I'm not really making any connections, so I don't have a whole lot to say. And then another client that heard that group would bring it up. Well, what about that relationship you were talking about 3 days ago? You know, and so, in that way, a lot of the time it's helpful because it's not coming from me, as I said earlier, with the team aspect and how the clients. They really respond to each other.
That's it.
Yeah. Really, really well, you know, and they can be a little more, almost aggressive
or in direct.
A way. Yeah, more direct. Yeah.
I was gonna ask that question too, so I'm glad we kind of got there organically.
Yeah,
that's good. I like that.
All right, so I'm going to tell you my favorite team. We've sat in many teams, and one of my favorite ones, I think we call it Program Pop. And this gives people a chance to ask a question of their peers, but not have to say it's from them. That way it's a completely unbiased, for any reason, way. And so they'll like write out a question, get ready to go home, my girlfriend's cheated on me, do you think this is a good idea? Mm-hmm. Something like that, where it doesn't disclose at all who they are, and you pass the thing around the room and everybody gets to chime in on it without knowing who they're responding to or helping. And I found that to be really fascinating because people were way more honest. They weren't worried about hurting feelings. They gave their opinion. And I think it really helped the person to get a very unbiased opinion about these things as well. Wow.
Yeah, the problem pop. Yeah. And it's a good one. I came up with that one.
Ooh, and, nice, Tom. That's a great one, yeah.
It usually works really, really well. Yeah, because people are way more open and willing to share. Yeah, because the feelings and the relationship that they may have with that person is kind of out of the room for the time. They just hear whatever the problem is. And they can just, you know, put into practice their own problem solving skills, their own experience, and they present it in a way that it really can land with that person.
Yeah, and it's safe and it's anonymous. Yeah. So it makes people way more willing to like really be truthful and express everything, I think.
Yeah. It's a great group. I haven't facilitated it in a long time.
Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe you should do that this week, Tom.
Yeah, yeah.
Problem pop, bring it back.
Bring it back. Yeah.
It also sounds like there's no like narrative to it. There's no like ego attached. It's just kind of objective. This is the objective problem. Like, what do you guys think?
Yeah. And you know, the person in the room, you know, they often
blush at all.
Yeah. They sit quietly a lot of the time and they just soak it all in, you know, and, other times, there's some missing information and they feel the need to speak up.
Yeah, they give you all the data.
That would drive me crazy.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then the whole group, it doesn't pan out perfectly in that case, but, a lot of the time, I'd say like 80% of the time it pans out really, really well, you know, where, you know, they get a lot of great advice and feedback on, you know, a certain issue that they're having and they don't feel necessarily called out, you know, and so that they're, you know, more receptive and it soaks in, you know?
Well, you brought up an interesting point and you literally are doing it live every time. So you can run that same exact group four different times and have four totally different results because there's always different, it's always varying depending on who's in the room and where they're at with things. And so, you know, it's interesting, like it's standard, but not standard because you never really know the outcome. You could have the best one ever and the next time it flops terribly. So it's interesting because you've got to be able to pivot because you're going in thinking this is going to be great. And all of a sudden the response isn't great because of that particular group and you've got to pivot to make it great.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's a balancing act, you know, where, yeah. I mean, and I think for that particular group, it works best when they actually pick really, really like serious issues that they've had a hard time expressing, you know, during their program. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of one of the prompting points, you know, before they write down their problem and we put them in a bowl, you know, and I pick which one to talk about is to really, really pick something that really means a lot to them that they might not have shared with others, you know, and just getting different perspectives. You know, a lot of these clients, they have so many great personal experiences. You know, we all have a hard time solving our own problems, but when you throw somebody else's problem out there, we usually do a pretty good job.
Yeah. Like
most people they do a pretty great job at solving problems that aren't theirs,
right?
You know,
and that's got to feel good too when they get validated as the person that gave this really great advice, and they see it land, and the person really, you know, accept it and liked it. That's got to help them feel good as part of, you know, the contributing and giving back, which is, you know, new for an addict.
Yeah, people walk away from that one really thinking about some stuff. Yeah, really thinking about some different perspectives.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking, when you were saying like how the group can go so many different ways, it's like the participants are always different, you know? And so what it brings me back to is just the balancing act that you do as a group facilitator. And I guess for me personally, what I'm sitting with is like admiration for you doing that, because I don't do that, you know? So I think that's why I've been interested in like highlighting the difference, because I don't do that, you know? So I guess kudos to you, Tom, for being able to balance all that. You know, I respect and admire that, because I know that there'd be a learning curve there for me where I don't know. I guess that
You'd
makes sense,
be
right?
Fine. With enough, you would be fine.
I but feel it's like I figured it out, but
yeah,
I respect
definitely
it.
Not for everybody. I mean, you know, you can train and learn, but not everybody has that skill. And it's a skill and ability. Definitely. There's not a lot of people that can think fast, pivot, control the room. That's a lot you have going on just in that one little aspect of your job.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I appreciate it, Dallas.
Yeah, of course,
and Angie. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a culinary artist. Baker, you know, we were just talking about that at lunch, which I thought was funny,
right,
but
totally
yeah.
different, but the same deal.
But it's also why this place is so helpful. Like we were talking with Scott, remember how Scott was saying if he's not getting through to a client, he knows that Tom might during one of his teams, or that I might, or that Cass might, or that Jeff might. And there's like, it's what makes us so special here is it's getting addressed in so many different ways at all times. And we are a team, you know, and I think that. We're a team first, you know, and then we run teams and they become teams and we all kind of create this culture of help, which is cool to see.
Yeah, and I think something that helps create that team is just a little bit of self-exposure, you know?
Yeah. Like, on your end?
On my end.
Yeah,
letting,
of course.
Letting the veil down a little bit, mm-hmm. but, you know, and knowing when it's appropriate and knowing when it's not. I think, like, you know, my story, things that have happened to me it's pretty gnarly, you know? And, I think a lot of people really connect to that. But something I really try to do is just being, you know, sharing things like that at the right time and not talking about myself too much.
Mm-hmm.
And really listening, you know, and encouraging other people to speak. I spent a lot of time as a facilitator just listening and prompting questions, listening and prompting questions. The more that they're engaged, just the more they get out of it, obviously. And the more everyone has an opportunity to share, whether it's good or bad, you know, the more they get out of it. You know, they're involved.
I love what you just said there, and it goes so well with other, you know, other episodes we've touched on, is they respond well because you've been there. Again, you're not sitting in the white coat telling the group what their problem is. You're speaking from experience of, I've been there. And I think people listen so much better when they understand and they mm-hmm. recognize, oh, you totally know what I'm going through. And mm-hmm. they don't try to pull the same BS because they know you've been there and they know you're going to call them on it or not buy into it. And so, you know, again, that's the magic that we talk about with this program is so many of us having been through rehab and addiction ourselves, we get such a good response from all the people that we're helping.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've seen facilitators kind of be too much of an open book, you know, where they talk way too much about themselves. Mm-hmm. But if, let's say you're with a group for an entire week and you share just two big things about yourself for mm-hmm. that entire week, those two things go a long way a lot of the time. And
of course,
yeah, clients really feel connected. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. You know, it's a beautiful thing to have a place where we've all, you know, been through it, you know, we've all been through it before. And, you know, that's something you often hear a lot from the clients is that's why they like this place.
Right.
Yeah. You guys have been there, you know, mm-hmm. you didn't just read your, you know, techniques in a book, you know, applied them to yourself and now you're, you know, assisting us in adopting those techniques. And it just works so much better like that. I couldn't tell you like how many treatment centers I went to where I just didn't feel as though the person on the other end of that therapy was authentic, you know, with
been there, yeah,
with you know, their approach, you know. So
that totally makes sense. That's the number one, well, one of the number one things we hear is people like that we're genuine.
Yeah.
And that comes from having been there and done that.
Absolutely.
You can't replicate that authenticity. You either lived it or you didn't.
Yeah.
It's like kind of the whole, like, who would you want your personal trainer to be? You know, what would you want them to look like? Right. Like,
totally.
The guy that's super in shape or the guy that's like eating the Ruffles in the corner being like, yeah, let's go over fitness, you know, like,
right.
I've been to gyms where I've seen both, you know?
Same. Yeah. And I was like,
yeah, I've been like, I don't want that guy to teach me how to get fit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. Love it.
One more question before we move on, Tom. What's your favorite team? What's
that's
your
favorite? That's a good question. I was itching to ask that one too.
Yep. What's your number one? And I'll give you a sec to think about it because there's a lot to choose from. But what one do you really enjoy?
Man, that's
and
tough.
And why?
I like the group. I guess the first thing that comes to mind is I like this group that we do where we show a presentation of Simon Sinek's Why Leaders Eat Last.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Great video.
Yep.
I really like that group because it really hammers home the point that they need to get involved in their recovery. I mean, there's a lot leading up to that point where, you know, anyone can take from, you know, the information leading up to that point. But the fact that helping another can save you in your recovery. You know, I love that point, and it's so true. And we see so many people fail at recovery because they just don't get involved in the community. You know, they don't get involved in
treatment.
Yeah, treatment, service. Aftercare, service. Yeah. Exactly. I love that group because, yeah, that's something I really, really feel passionate about. You know,
so you don't just watch the video, like you get feedback. No. There's more that you do to really get them thinking with it.
Oh, yeah. It's a great group. It's one of the groups where I honestly I do more talking than other groups where it's a lot of listening around the circle, you know, maybe various little writing assignments and they share about what they wrote. It's a different group than that. You know, it's one of those groups where I feel okay with coming from that position of like, okay, guys, you really need to listen to me on this point.
Yeah.
Like
this, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. This point is something that I'm sorry. I couldn't tell you any other way. I'm going to be very direct. This is extremely important for you all to understand. And, you know, we talk about, you know, ways that they can apply just the concept of helping another here, you know, and it goes over in that video, it goes over, you know, endorphins, dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, and it gives them a lot of great information, you know, about how they can release those feel good chemicals just in their day to day life. You know, a lot of them are so unbalanced, you know, from their drug use. So they're just still not feeling good. And it, you know,
gives and they're still very self-centered. It's all about me.
Yeah,
it's very
exactly,
very
exactly.
much what, you know, addicts and alcoholics do. It and becomes it, all about them.
And it gives them some science behind, like, okay, like, well, here's what the team can, like, getting involved in the team dynamic can do for you biologically.
Yeah,
this can actually help you feel better.
You can't dispute it.
Yeah, you can't. You know, and I and another one. I almost said this one first.
Okay.
Is it a tie?
We'll let you have two.
Is it a tie?
Yeah, it's a close tie. Yeah, it's called Play the Tape Through.
That is a good one.
It's a good one. And it's a little dark in a way because the client literally will play through a situation like a threat to their recovery, whether that be just getting a phone call from, you know, an old using buddy, you know, and they play through the worst case scenario of that. And when clients take it seriously, they don't, when they, you know, don't have too much fun with it, it's really pretty eye opening, you know, and
it's really real.
And it's
like
really,
any one of
really
those
real.
Scenarios is absolutely, it's life or death.
Yeah,
that can happen.
Exactly. You know, and so it's hard to a lot of, It's interesting. You see a lot of clients kind of, they have a hard time, you know, seeing the worst case. They've been doing so much to protect themselves from not seeing this negative outcome that could be around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting group as a facilitator because, you know, you just gently encourage it and you just keep gently encouraging them. Okay. Like what could happen next? You know, what could happen next? Okay. You got in a car accident.
Then what?
You went to jail, you know.
You killed someone.
Yeah.
Because you were driving drunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's what could happen next? Where, you know, and you just so it's dark in a way.
However, that's good though, because we do so much positivity here that I think it's also important to confront reality of what could happen if you don't apply what you learn.
Yeah, it's another one that it's like we make it in a way, we try to make it like a game. You know, where clients around the room, they make up scenarios for each and every person around them, you know, two scenarios, you know, and this is a group that's done in phase three. So they all know each other pretty well at that point, or maybe really well in some cases. And so the clients, they come up with these scenarios and they read them to the particular person that's picked. I won't go over the exact layout of the group, but it's interesting. And some of these clients, they come up with some situations that are just that floor, you know.
So the they're playing the tape forward for the other person, not themselves?
No, they play the tape forward for themselves, but the situation, the threat to the recovery is given to them by one of their peers.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Right. So it's a good group. And the part that makes it good is that that threatening situation is coming from their peers.
Right.
You know, so there's a level of respect, like, oh, wow, you could see this happening to me, you know, and they're like, dang, it really could.
It's not like predetermined. It's not like this, yeah. Like, you're going to get a trigger and what are you going to do?
No.
It's like your buddy. It's like, dude, your ex-girlfriend's like, calling.
Yeah.
And it's like super real.
Exactly.
I like that.
And they even know the ex-girlfriend's name.
Yeah.
You know? And they may paint the scenario like even, you know, even better, you know, like you just got off of a difficult day at your new job where you're not feeling super comfortable, you know, you're vulnerable, you know, you kind of feel alone, you're driving on your way on, you know, driving at night, you know, going home or going to your SLE, mm-hmm. and you get a call from, Crystal, you know, and Crystal's, you know, begging for you to come over there and help her. And you know, she's got dope because, you know, she hasn't quit. What do you do? And then, you know what I mean? So.
And they're just like, what do you do?
And they feel it because that's how well the clients know each other at that point in the program. They can like really, they just know what's going to be the biggest threat for each other, mm-hmm. you know, especially if they're all taking the program really seriously.
I think that's amazing because what it's doing, it's kind of like this book we were just reading, is it shines a light on their blind spots.
Yeah.
You know, they might be in denial about certain areas that they've gone through the program with, and this like magnifies, how about this? And they can't really back away from it because it's their peers that are saying, how about this? They're like, oh man.
Your roommate's like, we're going to shine a light on that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Remember that girl you talk about every night before bed? We're talking about her.
Yeah. And it gets people also out of that. Like, you know, as you're here in the program, you start building up your confidence and sometimes you can get kind of cocky.
Yeah.
You know, with your recovery, it's like, okay, well, let's say you made the wrong choice. How does that look for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just brings the reality back of how serious this all is, you know, and it breaks through some of that, you know, that ego that, you know, gets kind of built up around the recovery. A lot of people, they, you know, like, I got this. You hear that a lot. Like, I'll be fine. And it just puts things back into perspective for them, you know?
I think that's super important because we do see that here when people are ready to go, they're like, oh yeah, totally fine. I got this. And you're like, but do you, I don't want to say it's easy to stay sober in rehab, although it is, you don't have drugs in your face. You don't have alcohol in your face. You don't have all those triggers that you're going to be confronted with when you leave, but the real work starts when you leave. And if you're not properly prepared, the first thing that happens, you're going to, you know, be right Rumble. Back in it. Yeah, so it's great to play every possible thing that could happen so that they're best prepared when they leave.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dal, you looked deep in thought on that one. Yeah. I thought you were going to say something, but I wasn't sure.
Well, I just had, I don't know. I got a lot of questions, you know.
Good. So
I'm trying to just think of, you know, what the best ones are. Well, let's see here.
Well, I know for a lot of people, it's especially coming in, they're very uncomfortable talking about in a group setting. And I know we see this a lot here. I don't want to say it's a division, but there's the people that are coming in from alcohol, and then there's the people that are coming in from heroin. And sometimes they don't see that they're similar. They see there's a difference there. And I notice that come out in teams sometimes. It's like, oh, okay, but I wasn't doing heroin. This was just alcohol. So there's some rationalizing that happens on the alcohol side. And then there's, you know, the other side of it coming, well, you're not that bad. You're just drinking alcohol. Mm-hmm. Do you see that coming up in teams or sort of?
Yeah, I saw it come up actually 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago in a smart recovery meeting that we had where two older clients whose thing was drinking, and you know, they were successful in life and they kind of got into their addiction at a different point in their life, and here we are with a kind of a younger crowd, maybe, you know, 30s, mid 30s, you know, early 20s, you know, and they tried to make that separation between like how they were different. And I'd have to say that was one of the things that I actually shut down publicly mm-hmm. in group, just because I just didn't feel it was helpful for them. And you know, it creates a divide, you right. know, and, you know, I said something like, you know, we're not here to look at how we're different. We're here to look at how we're the same, you know, and I'm sure you can see that we're more alike than we are different when it comes to addiction. And I actually had to talk to the client afterwards, after group, and it was actually a long conversation. I almost missed my lunch. However, it went really well. And I think, you know, the point that I was trying to make was the same one that I made in group. However, just the client wanted to give me more more feedback into the way he was feeling or thinking about it, and trying to get me to understand where he was coming from. And honestly, I had to stand my ground on my viewpoint of it, and it ended up being great, you know. But we do see that a lot, yeah, yeah. Where people try to, you know, point out why they're different versus why, you know, I mean,
which addiction, is all part of the minimizing and rationalizing.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
I'm not that bad. I'm not doing what they're doing. And, yeah, you know, so we're not that same person.
Yeah, it's a form of denial.
Right.
You know, and it's difficult. That's probably the most difficult thing to get people to see, is when they're in denial.
Yeah.
You know, and people are very, I mean, it's already a defensive thing, being in denial.
Right.
You know, and so they're in this defensive mode. That's kind of what denial is, you know, they're protecting their addiction or their right. their belief about why it's okay, or
yeah. Well, and that's where groups become so interesting, because you're dealing with so many demographics and so many drugs of choice, men, women, young, old. You have so many different things going on that you have to find that common denominator for them, or mm-hmm. else they're going to easily look for and find the things of, like you said, mm-hmm. how they're not and why this doesn't apply to them.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah, it's as I said to the clients, and it's important for them to look at for reasons why they're similar, not different.
Yeah.
You know, it just
I like
it
that.
Does nothing. It does nothing for the group. It does nothing for the team thing that we talked about.
Right.
You know, and it, so.
Good. All right, Tom, this has been incredibly informational, I believe, on our teams and groups and why they're different and why we do them. So I want to ask you one last question or two. Why do you love Elevate? What is your passion? What is your purpose?
Ooh,
I kind
tough
of just
question.
Filled, I kind of just filled it in.
Yeah, yeah.
What's okay, your passion, so Elevate your passion and purpose. Why do you do it?
Well, I think it's incredibly important for me to be involved in recovery, you know, coming from where I came from. And, you know, my purpose is, you know, helping people through my experience and just through my, you know, genuine compassion for those that are hurting and suffering with their addiction. I think I get a lot from helping other people, and I love this group. I love Elevate. I love being a part of, you know, this team here with all the staff, and, you know, you guys are all my best friends, you know? And, so it's just a great environment to work in, you know, it's a great place to wake up and, you know, you're coming into work and you know you're going to help and change somebody's life every day, you know? And so you honestly can't, you can't beat it, you know? You can't beat that feeling of like, wow, I could potentially, you know, save somebody's life just with, you know, a 15-minute conversation, you know? So, yeah, there's a lot of purpose in that right there. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Tom. Like Angie said, that was extremely constructive. And I think anyone that doesn't know about Elevate or doesn't know about like the teams or the curriculum or the groups that we do, I think they understand now.
Last question. Tom, how long have you been with us?
7 years. Yeah. 7 years and 2 months.
Yeah.
And some change.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a while. And, and you've grown incredibly. You have a family. You have a son. You're doing pretty well.
Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. A lot of change here.
Yeah. And can we talk about you just put out a record?
Oh.
In your spare time?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well,
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do a little bit of music, a little sing and play, and it's like an acoustic recording. It's under the name Tommy versus Tommy, but the first Tommy is backwards. So YMMOT VSTOMMY.
Mouthful.
Yeah.
Tommy versus Tommy, the first Tommy's backwards.
The first Tommy's backwards.
That actually helps me understand it better. Yeah.
Yeah, the EP title is Beachtown Blues. You can get it on Apple Music, Spotify. You can find it. It's out there.
It's the only thing that's Tommy backwards versus Tommy.
Yeah, it's the only thing that's Tommy backwards. You type in Tommy backwards, it's coming up.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
You can't miss it.
Yeah, you can't miss it. If it's not, then I need to change something. But it's just some emotional songs. You know, it's a great way for me to process, you know, difficult things in life, you know, difficult thoughts, difficult emotions, and you know, that's kind of where I went with that.
Yeah. Well, and it's so different because, you know, your years as a musician, you were on drugs like a lot of that time. And although you wrote a lot of music, it was coming from such a different place that you writing music sober and performing and playing, it's you know, night and day for you, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's I really value vulnerability, you know, and whereas before I feel as though I was just really, really fake with my art. And getting clean, getting sober really helped me tap into like more sensitive side, I guess. You know, I was always into kind of like that genre of emo style music, but I don't think I really like experienced the creation of it authentically, which I feel like I've achieved now, you know. So I don't know. I hope you guys like
it. Awesome. I love it.
They're going to love it. They're going to love it, Tom. Yeah. Congrats on that, man. Yeah. Thanks for coming out on the show. This has been awesome.
Hell yeah.
Get prepared for version 2, where we'll go over CrossFit and fitness, because us three are CrossFit coaches and we have a passion for that for sure.
Yeah.
And we're going to do a whole episode on fitness and Elevate and why we do it.
There we go. Yeah, we'll stay tuned for that.
All right.
All right. You guys have a good day.
Cool. Peace.
All right, guys, that's our show for today. We hope you found some value from listening. And if you did, please share with someone you know or love. You can find us on social media. We are at Elevate Addiction Services.
And if you or a loved one are struggling with addiction, please call our toll-free, confidential 24-hour helpline at 833-33-SOBER or visit our website at elevaterehab.org.